fans, we can all listen to the Sunny Side of Sports.
Great show, bro. This is Sunny Side of Sports.
Right here on the Voice of America.
Voice of America.
This is Dan Friedel in for VOA's Sonny Young in Washington. Welcome to the Sunny Side of Sports. We have a full show for you today, so let's get started. Now, while the NBA season is still about 2 months away, there's an international basketball tournament on the horizon that involves a number of African nations and a lot of NBA players. That's the FIBA World Cup, which starts in late August in China. Just to set the table a bit, the tournament involves the top 32 teams in the world with 8 four-team groups. The tournament progresses just like the Soccer World Cup, with each team playing 3 group matches before moving into the knockout phase. The top teams in the world are, in order, the U.S., Spain, France, Serbia, and Argentina. The Giannis Antetokounmpo-led Greek team is ranked 8th in the world. The African teams who qualified for the tournament are Ivory Coast, Nigeria, Tunisia, Angola, and Senegal. We're joined now on the Sunny Side of Sports by Ben Golliver, the NBA reporter for the Washington Post here in Washington, D.C. Ben is actually based in California, where there's been a lot of news recently with the L.A. Lakers and the L.A. Clippers in this NBA offseason. Welcome to the show, Ben.
Oh, it's my pleasure. How are you?
It's good to have you back. I think the last time that we had you, we were talking about the development of Giannis Antetokounmpo as becoming the NBA's MVP, and a player like Pascal Siakam from Cameroon making his presence felt in the NBA Finals. And let's start there. We've got a big international basketball tournament coming up at the end of August. It's the FIBA World Cup in China, starting August 31st. You just wrote something for the Washington Post. The question is, is the USA team vulnerable this time around? What do you think about that?
Well, absolutely. So if you go back, the last 10 years or so, USA basketball has just had a complete stranglehold on both, the FIBA World Tournament and also the Olympics. I mean, it's just been gold medal, and lots of blowouts. This year it could be different, because the USA basketball really had a hard time recruiting and retaining the top-level all-star players. No LeBron James, no Kevin Durant because he's injured, no Russell Westbrook, no Steph Curry. So with all those big names out of the picture, it really opens the door for basically everybody else around the world to kind of take their best shot at USA basketball. And if you talk to the executives with USAB, they say it's the change of the tournament. You know, this tournament used to be on sort of the in-between years of the Olympics, so that there would be some rest time before and after the tournament. Now this year they're doing it just 1 year before the Olympics, and so lots of players don't want to commit to those the long USA basketball season in the summer in back-to-back years. And so that has really created this opportunity for a team like Spain that's come in second to the United States a couple of times. Serbia, who should have a player like Nikola Jokic, one of the best young players and highest MVP candidates last year in the NBA. And then also Greece with Giannis Antetokounmpo, probably the best player in the world right now, or at least arguably so. He will lead that team. So I'm not sure that USA is frightened quite yet. I mean, they're still going to have an entire roster full of NBA players, which no one else will be able to match in terms of their depth. But they probably won't have the best player in the tournament on their roster. And, I think that's a different situation than they've been in here in the last couple of tournaments.
So, Ben, what does it say about the development of basketball on the world stage that you've got a major international tournament like this, and the best player in the tournament is probably going to be Giannis Antetokounmpo with his Nigerian heritage playing for Greece?
I think it's a great thing for international basketball. Now, FIBA, they got a lot of flack for changing the way this tournament was, timed and when it was scheduled, because it's weird to have a big tournament kind of on an odd year rather than the even years like, say, the Soccer World Cup the Olympics, the Summer Olympics. But the benefit of changing it is that it does sort of get to stand alone, right? It's not in soccer's shadow. It's not in the Olympics' shadow. It gets to sort of be its own event. And they really beefed up the tournament as well. They changed the way the qualifying process worked. They added a lot of games. And they also expanded the field so that more teams could qualify. So I think what FIBA is really trying to do is use this particular tournament as a way to grow the sport globally. And, you know, that plan sounds great in theory, but it only works if the best players decide they want to play. And so I think it's, you know, really important for guys like Giannis or a player like Jokic or the Spanish guys who have been so committed for years, or the French guys, you know, players like Nicolas Batum and Tony Parker, who have, you know, for a really long time represented their country. It's really big for those guys to play in this tournament, because I think that's how you help spread the game all across the world, you know, throughout Africa, throughout Asia, and everywhere else. And so I think it should be a nice showcase event. It runs for about 2 weeks. You know, as you mentioned, August 31st through mid-September. It will be in China, where I'm sure there's going to be great crowds because they love basketball there. So it should be, you know, quite the showcase.
We're joined by Ben Golliver, the NBA reporter for The Washington Post. Ben, one more question about this international tournament starting in about 3.5 weeks. Looking at some of the African teams in the tournament, you have Angola, you have Senegal, you have Ivory Coast, Nigeria, and even a North African team, Tunisia, in the tournament. Any one of those African teams expected to make any noise in this event?
I don't think so. I think the favorites are generally sort of the same old familiar names that we've heard from past years. I think USA will be still a strong betting favorite despite their challenges with the roster this year. Then you're going to be looking at Spain and France. I mean, these are organizations that have had you know, extended success and have really have a built up infrastructure and a high level collection of talent. And then I think maybe the third tier contenders would be teams like Serbia, who I believe made the gold medal game in the Rio Olympics, as well as Greece. And so I think if you're an African fan looking for somebody to sort of bandwagon or hop on, you know, Greece might be the team. Giannis Antetokounmpo obviously has the Nigerian roots, and he's someone who's, you know, I think throughout the postseason run with Milwaukee, really made it clear how much Africa means to him. He wore multiple different T-shirts, you know, kind of you know, paying homage to his heritage there. So if you're trying to go for gold, I'd say ride the Giannis train.
Thanks for that, Ben. We're joined by Ben Golliver from The Washington Post. Now, Ben, recently you were talking about some of the projected NBA win totals for the 2019-2020 NBA season. It's kind of hard to believe that we're already thinking about how many games are the Golden State Warriors going to win or how many games are the Milwaukee Bucks going to win. Maybe you can explain to our audience what the significance of these projected win totals, why people are talking about it. And just to kind of get things kicked off, you have a team like the Golden State Warriors, which you know, is like a 60-win team the last few years, and these casinos that are putting together the idea of how many wins they're going to have this year have the Warriors pegged in the high 40s. That's going to be a big change for Golden State this year.
Absolutely. So the over-under concept actually tries to measure two things. I think, first of all, it measures how good do we expect this team to be. But the casinos or the, you know, the odds makers, like you mentioned, they use, you know, very complicated formulas to come up with these. But it also measures a little bit how much hype have these teams gotten, right? Because if lots of people are feeling very strongly about a team, then their over-under number will rise. If other, you know, if lots of people are very low on a particular team, the number will drop, right? So it's a measure of public confidence as well as just sort of projected success. And the Warriors are a great example of this because they're losing Kevin Durant. You know, Klay Thompson will be injured to start the season. And this is what most people would look at as sort of a rebuilding type year, or at least a retooling type year. You see this big drop from them. I think it could be a situation where the observers are a little bit too negative. They're buying into the idea that, oh, these huge losses are going to be decimating Golden State, and they're not going to be able to kind of continue forward. You know, the old Spurs teams with Tim Duncan, they would just run off 50 wins year after year after year, and we would all sit around and kind of wonder, how are they still able to maintain this incredible consistency? And I wonder if the Warriors are going to be able to do something similar. Remember, they still have Steph Curry. They still have Draymond Green. They brought in D'Angelo Russell, who was an all-star last year. And they still have a great coach in Steve Kerr. And so you add all those things up, despite the losses. To me, this is still a team I think could could reach 50 wins. And so, you know, in this scenario, if I were to recommend betting on, you know, one side, I would say go ahead and bet the over. You know, believe that they're going to surpass those expectations that are in the high 40s, like you mentioned.
Thanks, Ben. That's Ben Golliver of the Washington Post. Sonny will have more from my chat with Ben on Tuesday's show, including what he's looking forward to from both the LA Lakers and the LA Clippers this year. Should be an exciting year for basketball in Southern California. Now, spinning the globe to Europe, it's hard to believe it's already time to start tracking what's going on in professional soccer in that part of the world, but the English Premier League schedule gets started this week, and a number of the high-profile friendlies just wrapped up. We're joined now by Prince Nesta. Prince, it's hard to believe that we're really getting down to the opener of the European soccer seasons. It just feels like we wrapped up the Champions League just the other day. Welcome to the show, Prince.
Thank you so much, Dan, and I'm really looking forward to the Premier League.
So, Prince, we saw kind of a preview of what's to come in the English Premier League on Sunday. Manchester City and Liverpool played in the Community Shield and went down to post-match penalties. What happened in that match?
Yeah, that was such an entertaining clash. The Community Shield Cup, it's only two penalties to separate the two teams. And Gabriel Jesus actually converted such a decisive spot kick, if you ask me, after Jorginho Wijnaldum had actually missed for Liverpool. And earlier on in the first half, we'll recall that Raheem Sterling actually had given City an early lead that reflected the Premier League champions' first half superiority, because, you know, Manchester City actually started the game in control, but Liverpool regained the fluency, you know, striking the frame of the goal twice before the indomitable Lions of Cameroon centre-back Joel Matip nodded an equaliser. The Reds actually came close later on in the second half when Egyptian playmaker Mo Salah headed the ball past City's shortstopper, but a spectacular clearance off the line by Kyle Walker actually saved the situation for Manchester City.
Prince, as the 28th edition of the Premier League kicks off this Friday, which teams do you think are well-placed to win the trophy? Are we going to see more of the same that we saw last year, or any changes in the rankings?
Oh, man. My bet is actually more of the last, you know, what we saw last year. My bet is still on Liverpool and Manchester City. I actually watched them tear each other apart during the Community Shield yesterday. And both teams actually look set. They've got the right quality to win the league this season. You know, considering the fact that Manchester City has actually bolstered their squad. And they've got this new recruit, who's also a record signing, Rodri. And indeed, he cannot be underestimated because he's got the ability to hold the ball, create chances. And he's a terrific ball. He's got, like, terrific ball passing ability. And, you know, one thing is that he understands the game that Pep Guardiola wants to play. He fits right in the chemistry. And it should be easier for him to actually, you know, get used to players such as David Silva. He's also from Spain. Bernardo Silva and Kevin De Bruyne and Aguero. And surely their combination is going to be a sight to behold. And the question is, will Manchester City win it for the third straight season to equal the English record for consecutive top-flight titles? Yeah, we'll wait and see.
Well, Prince, that's really interesting to hear your explanation about how Rodri, who maybe isn't that well-known to our African audience, is going to fit in with that English team. On the other hand, Manchester City and Liverpool did match up extremely well with each other. What do you think about Liverpool's chances for the Premier League?
Oh, man, Liverpool, actually, on the other hand, they've got, to a large extent, maintained the same score that earned in the Champions League last season. Actually, a lot of people refer to them as the Fantastic Seven squad. And surely it's going to be quite easy for, you know, Mane and the rest to actually build upon where they left off last season. And I also think Arsenal also stands a better chance of returning to the top four this season. And they've got their recent signing, the Ivorian attacker extraordinaire Nicolas Pepe and dynamic midfielder Danny Cabales, who virtually lifted the mood of the Emirates, although they still have to deal with their defensive inadequacies. They've actually been trying to sign a defender since the summer started, but we'll wait and see how that goes. And then also the imminent arrival of English defender Harry Maguire could also make Manchester United's top four flight closer than ever. And the same applies to Wonderboy's Christian Pulisic's arrival at Chelsea.
Prince, so in another action in European soccer, Barcelona stunned Arsenal to win the Gamper Trophy at Camp Nou.
That's right, Dan. And the win was courtesy of an extraordinary own goal from Arsenal's defender, Ainsley Maitland-Niles, in the last-minute winner from Luis Suarez, as Barcelona actually came from behind to win the match. Gabon international Pierre-Emerick Aubameyang had given Arsenal the lead in the first half after firing a fierce shot into the top corner from just inside the box. But all in all, Barca dominated much of the play, but were finding it so difficult to create openings in the absence of their prolific playmaker, Lionel Messi. But the capacity crowd did get their first glimpse of the $130 million signing Antoine Griezmann, who came from Atletico Madrid. The Frenchman was fairly quiet, but will be remembered for scoring a goal that was ruled to be offside. Arsenal actually faced Newcastle in the Premier League opener this weekend.
Prince, so most of these teams have their rosters fairly set, but there still are some players out there who might be moving. What's the latest on the transfer market?
Yeah, I've got a few. Reports indicate that Manchester United have already ended talks, unfortunately, with Paulo Dybala, because the Juventus strikers is actually asking for a little bit too much in terms of his wage demand. And the Red Devils had entered the talks with the 25-year-old Argentine, and they are actually hoping for a swap deal involving Romelu Lukaku. And Everton have also signed Juventus' 19-year-old Italian international forward of Ivorian descent, Moise Kean, for $33 million on a 5-year deal. Kean will also be a key addition to the squad because he's a prolific goal scorer. It's just that since Cristiano Ronaldo arrived at Juventus, then he's had to actually sit at the bench. But he's actually scored 8 times in 21 games for Juventus and has already struck 2 goals in 3 Italian matches. Newcastle have also signed French winger of Haitian descent, Alan Saint-Maximin from Nice, for a reported $20 million fee on a 6-year deal. And then Brazilian winger Malcolm is also sent to leave Barcelona after only one season to join Zenit St. Petersburg, while other deals that have already been sealed involved last week's Arsenal's confirmation of the signing of Ivorian forward Nicolas Pepe from Lille. Paris Saint-Germain have also signed Senegalese international midfielder Idrissa Gueye for an understood fee of around $36 million. Lastly, Dan, Atletico Madrid legend Gianfran has also signed for Brazil's Sao Paulo after his contract at the Spanish side ended last season.
Well, thanks for that rundown, Prince. It's really good to have you on the show once again. Thanks for joining the Sunny Side of Sports on this Monday.
Thank you, Dan. Anytime.
Looking at the last weekend, we saw the conclusion of an exciting international tennis tournament here in Washington, D.C., and that's the City Open. VOA intern Ryan Handel was there for most of the tournament, and he's here now with the recap. Sporty greetings, Ryan.
Sporty greetings, Dan. The City Open did not disappoint. Both the men's and women's tournaments brought plenty of exciting action. Let's start with the women's side. It was chaos and controversy from the very start. Last year's singles champion, Svetlana Kuznetsova of Russia, could not even come to Washington, D.C. to compete and defend her title due to visa issues. Then, the top two seeds, American home favorites Sloane Stephens and Madison Keys, were upset in the very first round. By the quarterfinals, only one of the eight-seeded women remained, and by the semifinals, none were left. In the end, it was unheralded American Jessica Pegula who defeated Italian Camilla Giorgi in the women's singles final by a dominant 6-2, 6-2 scoreline. It was Pegula's first ever career Women's Tennis Association Tour title. An interesting fact about Jessica Pegula, she's the daughter of Terry Pegula, owner of the American NFL team, the Buffalo Bills, and the American ice hockey team, the Buffalo Sabres. 15-year-old up-and-coming star Coco Gauff also lost in the first round of women's singles after advancing through qualifying into the main draw. But teaming up with fellow American Katie McNally, who is only 17 years old herself, the duo blitzed their way through the doubles tournament, winning the title without dropping a single set. With a combined age of just 32, the team was well younger than some of the individual players in the tournament, such as 40-year-old men's player Ivo Karlovic of Croatia. The future of women's tennis looks bright as ever with these two young studs on tour. If that wasn't enough, the men's tournament at the City Open was just as fascinating. Just like in the women's tournament, there were some stars unable to compete, like South African giant Kevin Anderson, who was unfortunately forced to withdraw with knee issues. And there were early upsets, like the unseeded Joe Wilfried Tsonga taking out second-seeded Karen Khachanov in just the second round. But the real drama came in the men's semifinals, specifically the one between 20-year-old tournament favorite Stefanos Tsitsipas of Greece and the mercurial, inconsistent, but highly talented Nick Kyrgios of Australia. Kyrgios and Tsitsipas knew each other well coming into the match. They had played doubles together earlier in the week, and they brought the heat for this high-caliber battle. Kyrgios was firing on all cylinders early in the match. He took the first set, 6-4, hitting a blazing 230-kilometer-per-hour serve in the process. But then everything came unraveled. After Tsitsipas broke Kyrgios' serve in the second set, the Australian completely lost his temper, throwing his racket multiple times and proceeding not to even try for the rest of the set. However, he refocused, dueling with Tsitsipas in an epic third deciding set, eventually won by Kyrgios 9-7 in the tiebreaker. And Nick Kyrgios went on to win in the final the next day, beating Russian Daniil Medvedev in two consecutive sets. Still, Kyrgios vs. Tsitsipas was the match of the tournament, and one of the best tennis matches of this year. Finally, the men's doubles tournament was won by the team of South African Robin Clawson and New Zealander Michael Venus. But the story of men's doubles was British brothers Andy Murray and Jamie Murray teaming up and winning their first match before falling to Clawson and Venus in a very tight quarterfinal. Andy Murray seems to have recovered well from his hip surgery and was moving smoothly this weekend. He'll stick to doubles this week at the Canadian Open, teaming up with Spaniard Feliciano Lopez. But he did say a few days ago that he might make his singles return the following week at the Cincinnati Masters Tournament. I think we're all eager to see him make his debut. That's all I have after a wild week of tennis at the City Open in Washington, D.C. Back to you, Dan.
Ryan, let me follow up real quick. What did you think of being there at the tournament for that semifinal match between Kyrgios and Tsitsipas? What was the theater like?
It was an awesome atmosphere, one of the best live sporting events I've went to. You might not expect it because Kyrgios is often a controversial player, but the crowd was very much in his favor. Every point he won, every wild shot when he would hit the ball between his legs or throw in an underarm serve to throw Tsitsipas off his game, the crowd would just go wild. It was great to watch.
Well, that's really exciting that you got a chance to see that, Ryan. Thanks for all your help this week. And that wraps up the August 5th edition of The Sunny Side of Sports. Thanks to producer Bill Werkinger and engineer John Dryden. Thank you for tuning in. Sunny's back on Tuesday. I'm Dan Friedell, and that's The Sunny Side of Sports.
I get it. The Voice of America's flagship global news program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. We have hundreds of reporters gathering the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 17 UTC and 2230 UTC. We're also available online at voanews.com.
Hello, this is Shaka Sali, host of Straight Talk Africa. The Voice of America's Straight Talk Africa puts you in touch with newsmakers and experts as they talk about the most important social and political issues that affect you. Tune in Wednesdays at 18:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
Hello, Africa. I'm James Butte, host of VOA's Daybreak Africa. When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you the news as it happens. Listen to Daybreak Africa Monday through Friday at 3, 4, 5, and 6 hours UTC. And our 5-minute newscast come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Are you suffering from heartache? No problem. We've got the cure for you. The African beat can soothe your heartache with its awesome tunes from the African continent. So join me, David Vandy, Mondays through Fridays at 0900 and 2000 Universal Time for a healing journey. I guarantee it.
Celebrate the sounds of Africa today, yesterday, and tomorrow. That's our mission in your show, Music Time in Africa. Hello, I'm your host, Heather Maxwell. Join me every Saturday and Sunday at 1500 and 2000 UTC and discover the best Pan-African music in the world. We play it all right here, only the best on VOA Africa.
This is Science in a Minute.
Astronomers from the Astronomical Observatory of the University of Warsaw have created a new three-dimensional map of the Milky Way, which they say provides an understanding of the structure and history of our galaxy. The new map shows that the Milky Way isn't flat, as had been thought, but is noticeably warped at its edges. The astronomers constructed the 3D map by studying data from 2,400 Cepheid stars that had been gathered by ground-based telescopes. Cepheids, also called Cepheid variables, are a class of supergiant stars that brighten and dim in a regular cycle. Radek Bolesky, formerly of the University of Warsaw and now at the University of Ohio, is one of the map creators. He says the problem astronomers have in studying the Milky Way is because we live in it and can't observe all of it from outside the galaxy. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, thank you for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London. This month, Border Crossings is giving away a really cool Voice of America t-shirt. Hooray! If you want to win one of these awesome shirts, all you have to do is make a song request for our show.
I see it, I like it, I want it.
Tune into Border Crossings at 1500 Universal Time every weekday in August for your chance to win.
VOA's Learning English is available online at learningenglish.voanews.com. Check out our programs such as Let's Learn English, English in a Minute, Everyday Grammar, and many more. VOA's Learning English, your reliable source for learning English.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, Managing Editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news and information.